the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me is a co-host so good it's scary, Kyle Kraus.
Ooh, I'm coming to scare you, kiddies. I don't know where this is going, and it's getting weird. I'm just going to stop.
It wouldn't be Halloween otherwise.
I don't know, man. Sometimes Halloween just keeps going and going and going.
It does. It does. It's weird. If you kidnap the Santa Claus, put him in a box, lock him up for 90 years, then see if he talks.
Yeah, perfect. Do that, I guess.
How are you doing, sir?
Oh, not too bad. There has been one thing I've been doing lately that I wanted to talk about, and that is watching The Inhumans, the new TV series, the new Marvel TV series that's airing on ABC right now. Yeah, it's ABC.
Oh.
Yeah, it's in place of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for the first half of the season, first quarter of the season, really.
Okay.
It's better than I expected, and I think it's better than a lot of the early teasers and just the general feeling that people had of it give it credit for.
Okay. So most reviews I've heard have compared it to favorably towards stomach acid,
really?
Nausea. I have not heard a single good thing about it at all.
It's not amazing. It's not
judicious.
It's not Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's not even Agent Carter, which I actually really loved. At least the first season was really good. The second season went off the rails a little bit, but I still liked it because, well, it's Agent Carter. Agent Carter's awesome. I mean, the character. So, but Inhumans, it's not that bad. It's cheesy. It's pretty cheesy comic book stuff. You know the story of the Inhumans, right? I mean,
they were never my go-to.
Even though they're a C-list Marvel team that nobody knows about, and I didn't know a dang thing about them until I started watching the show. I just thought they were like cheap X-Men that weren't quite X-Men. And that's kind of what they are.
That's the thing. They predate the X-Men, as far as I'm aware.
Yes, they do.
So when you feel like you're a knockoff to the knockoff, that's kind of...
They've never been a major player, and they've never been a big team until, I guess, kind of recently. Marvel's been trying to kind of push the Inhumans, except not completely. They haven't given them that big shove on the comic side, which I guess they just don't have much faith in them to carry a full-on everything. They're definitely not an X-Men replacement. It's not bad. It's a pretty straightforward story. It's kind of Shakespearean, except, you know,
well,
crap Shakespearean. Comic book Shakespearean. Inhumans, the story of the show is basically a very cheesy Shakespearean style knockoff of, you know, the Atalan getting overthrown by the human Inhuman and then kicking out the previous royal family. And now the royal family is on Earth and they're trying to get their city back.
Have you watched Game of Thrones at all?
No, I have not, but I'm sure that Game of Thrones has also borrowed this sort of plot.
I bring it up because I'm not familiar with Inhumans, the show, but I believe the actor playing Black Bolt's brother is more famously known for his role as Ramsay Bolton in Game of Thrones.
The guy playing Maximus? Probably.
I believe so. And Ramsay is best known for being an absolutely terrifying, sociopathic torturer. And that's putting it mildly. He is absolutely Machiavellian, soulless, and awful in the show. So to see him in any other role is kind of like going, oh, it's him. I know it's an actor. I know actors can do different roles. But it's that kind of sleazy, slimy, I know everything and you're going to hurt for it kind of personality that just kind of makes you cringe. So it'd be very hard for me to watch the show and not think of Ramsay, which is entirely my baggage, but just putting that out there.
He is the villain, obviously. He might be one of the more interesting characters, but I don't know. He's kind of whiny. He's kind of whiny because he got to, his inhuman power is being a human. So, I guess when he went through Chirogenesis, he became a human. So he didn't go through anything.
It actually puts me a step behind that one, and his power is dish soap.
Yeah, pretty much. So he's mad about that. He's jealous. He's mad.
That, and one of the complaints I've heard, and this I think is one of the undermining elements of the Inhumans in general, is that your heroes, the characters you're rooting for, are the upper class purely by chance, and that the reason they're dethroned is because people don't like being slaves in the moon mines. And it's like,
yeah,
that's really hard to root for you, Black Bolt, because you're kind of being a bad king.
Yeah, it's a very... Because it's only one city, and it's a very small population. They use a very strict caste system, so it's all very strict. Like, you're born into this. This is what you're going to do for your entire life. You have no movement up or down. You will never become royalty. You will never become a guard for the royal family. It's like, you're stuck. You were born in the mines. You're going to work in the mines. You're going to die in the mines.
Black Bolt.
That sounds like a horrible thing. And like, in comparison to our normal everyday modern society, it is. But given the circumstances that Atalan is in, it kind of makes some sense. But the gist of the show is also kind of exploring the lead characters as they kind of transition from being kind of these hardcore leaders into kind of more humanizing them and kind of softening them a little bit. Basically, the humans teach them humanity. That's what happens. Yeah.
I've never heard of that trope in any kind of sci-fi.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's very tropey. It's very cheesy. It's comic book cheesy in that sort of way where, like, it's either going to make you slap your head or you're going to, like, laugh and cheer because it's so ridiculous but so much fun, too. So
I can understand that.
All in all, I like it, and I'm interested in seeing where it's going, but I hesitate to, like, outright call it good.
You are entertained by it.
Exactly. I recognize the difference between when something is good and when something is entertaining. I think people kind of lose sight of that sometimes. Some people.
Sure.
They lose sight of, you know, something doesn't have to be good to be entertaining, and something doesn't have to be, you know, not everybody thinks the same things are good. So it's got its moments of fun and levity here and there. So I'm going to say give it a watch beyond at least the first two episodes, because the first two episodes are the ones where they're setting everything up. It's pretty clear where the budget went in that moment. But even still, if you're looking at the effects and you're like, oh God, this looks so bad, just remember it's a first season show. The budget's low. The budget's pretty low. But it gets better. So give it a shot. What about you, sir? How you doing?
Oh, I'm busy.
Oh,
some
yeah?
stuff we've already talked about on the show. Some stuff I can't talk about yet, but I'm busy and I like it.
Cool.
TV-wise, the latest season of Voltron has come out, and that was fun.
Oh, yeah?
Took a few turns that I did not anticipate. I've really enjoyed Netflix and DreamWorks' Voltron start to finish. Like, there hasn't been a single episode that has stood out and it's like, that was the weak one. Every single one of them has been entertaining in some capacity. And it's gone in directions that I was not anticipating. Like, case in point, there was one episode this season where the villains turned against each other for completely legitimate reasons. And Leah and I were wondering, well, these other characters didn't seem to react to that moment. Are we going to get any follow-up, or are they just kind of going to roll with it? Because either way would kind of make sense for the dynamic. And they did react, and they reacted in a way that was organic but surprising. It's like, ooh, this is neat and fun.
Hmm. See, I know very little about Voltron. I've never watched it, like, in my life, the original or new ones or anything.
I only knew of the original stuff on The Fringe, and it's hilariously violent if you go back and watch it.
So I've heard.
The newest version, kind of, it's a reboot of the series. Mm-hmm. You don't need to know anything going in, and it's very easy pick up and go.
It's about giant robots, right?
Yeah, there are giant robots.
Well, there are giant robots fighting. It's not necessarily about them, but it has giant robots fighting.
Yeah, it's more about the characters than anything else. It's a very character-driven show.
I like,
and it's very, very pretty.
I like things that are character-driven and have giant robots, so I'm cool with that. It sounds like a show that I might watch.
And the newest season of Miraculous, The Adventures of Ladybug and Chat Noir, has just started up, kind of piecemeal around the world. So info and accessibility is kind of trickling in, but we discussed this, I think it was last season on the Bumblecast.
Yeah, like episode 16 or something. It was a pretty early episode.
It's a superhero show with, you know, young teenage protagonists. It's very lighthearted, and it's kind of like you said with Inhumans. It doesn't necessarily have to be brilliant, but it's very entertaining.
Right.
It's very satisfying. The first season is very much monster of the week. You know the formula after watching the first episode. You're set. You're good.
Yeah.
But it still feels satisfying with each episode. Each one is really entertaining in its own right. And when it does move forward just that little bit, you're like, ooh, finally, a little bit of meat on that bone. The season opener went crazy. Like, there was so much advancement. In the first episode alone, it's like, oh, crap, where are they going to go with it now? I was expecting this to get stretched out for a whole season. It's done. Okay, what do we do now? So, looking forward to the rest of it.
Huh. I have still not even had the chance to really watch any of it.
If I have one gripe with the English dub, it's that it seems really fast-paced compared to the French. Which is weird because the CG is mapped to the English dialogue.
Sure.
Because North American broadcasting standards are shorter, or they're different than European ones, it comes across as a lot faster. So they're jabbering really quickly, and you got to get everything done for each commercial break. Whereas in the French, you could tell that it's paced out a tiny bit slower. It's not a huge difference, but I can feel the difference. Not that I speak a word of French, but it just feels like the English is a little sped up.
Huh.
Which, to me, kind of throws off the pacing of some of the jokes or some of the line delivery. But, I mean, it's a good dub. There's no cringeworthy voices, and, I don't know, it's a fun show. So give it a shot.
Huh. That's interesting. It's weird that there would be that much of a difference. But, then again, I think a lot of kids grew up with some video game sounding very different than what we got. Some European kids.
Mm-hmm.
Some earlier video games sounding very different with, like, weirdly slow music and weirdly detuned sound effects. It's like, that sounds really weird. I think the decent developers managed to compensate for it, but the not-so-great developers kind of... You drop the ball. So, I don't know, that's just really strange to me, though. I've never experienced that with TV, but...
Maybe we'll start moving to a standard now that everyone's doing digital? I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, was like we had moved beyond kind of this NTSC PAL thing, but what do I know? Anyway, are we ready to move on to our Bumble raffle?
I do believe so. The Bumble Raffle is a contest we have on every episode where you, dear listener, get to win a surprise prize. Now, if you want to enter, you can write in to bumblecast@yahoo.com. You need to write in for every episode to be entered into the draw, unless you're one of the beautiful, wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/bumblecast. You are automatically entered into every drawing.
You can win prizes. Fancy prizes.
So this episode's winner is...
Lee HK.
Congratulations, Lee. We will be in contact with you shortly. And if you don't hear from us, please yell at us, because that kind of happens sometimes.
Or maybe it's Lee H-K. I don't know.
Hyphenated last name. We keep it private. We keep it private.
Oh, okay. It is, okay. I thought that was their actual name on Patreon. It's like that we didn't, that it wasn't the shortened last name, that that was just the name they had on Patreon. Okay. Well, shows what I know. Let's get to our main topic.
Now, 'tis the season, and we like video games. We like Halloween. You like Halloween, don't you?
It's okay.
You love Halloween. For this episode, you love it.
Okay, I'm contractually obligated to love it for this episode only.
Like we got a contract. Anyway, so Kyle and I have compiled our top five spookiest moments from video games. Our personal heebie-jeebies. Spooky. The moments that we remember giving us the jibbly, 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 jibblies.
Spooky gaming memories. So who wants to start this shindig off, Ian?
Oh, I guess I'll have to be the brave one and jump in first.
Okay, good. Don't worry, I'll be right behind you.
Sure you will. That's the scary part.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So my number five spoopy moment are those stinking ghosts in Sonic 3 and Knuckles in Sandopolis Zone. Now, I don't know which is worse. Uh-huh. The fact that as Knuckles, they're already running loose and you start off in the darkened pyramid interior.
Mm-hmm.
Or if, when you're playing Sonic and Tails, it starts off just fine, and then you're the jerks who let him out!
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that part.
Eggman had him locked up. Eggman was the only one who knew what he was doing!
As usual.
And then, now, obviously, it's not terrifying, but when you're little, and that clock is ticking down, and things are getting darker, and they're starting to appear, and they're starting to get larger, and they're starting to look angrier, and then they start dive-bombing you, and you're trying to platform, and you're trying to grab her. And it's not like the ghosts themselves were that scary. It was the mounting dread. As the lights dimmed, you knew that you had to keep moving and find one of those light switches. It wasn't just a matter of get through the stage fast enough or platform correctly or bop that badnik. It was that you had to deal with this timer as well.
I don't remember these ghosts scaring me all that much, to be honest with you.
It wasn't the ghosts, it was the situation.
I suppose, yeah. It is a pretty tense situation, and it's really annoying when they start. When you can't find a light switch because the sand is filling up and you're like, where's the light switch? But yeah, it's pretty tame.
That's only number five. What about you?
Right. Well, my number five is also pretty tame and a lot more tame than I remember. I remember being a lot more horrifying than it actually is. And it's still kind of scary if you look at it. But it's really not that bad. So it's not nearly as bad as I had mentally pictured it before I actually went to go find the image that I'm remembering. So, for retro PC gamers out there, you might know of a little game called Tyrion. It is a vertically scrolling shooter, kind of in the vein of, oh, I don't know, 1942. Except it's a sci-fi space shooter in the far-flung year 3000. It's or something insane like that. I think it might be even beyond the year 3000. It might be sometime in 4000. Either way, it's a very good sci-fi game. There's not really anything too horrific or scary about it until you get to the end of episode 1, which is also the end of the shareware version of the game. And this was back when shareware was a big thing on the PC. You know, you passed around a disc of like the first part of a game, and then you could call up a phone number and order the rest of the game. This is before we had like downloading and the internet. Well, no, Caden, we had the internet, but it was very slow.
Yeah, 14.4K is not really going to get you much downloaded.
Yeah, yeah. Or even 56K. 56K is still very slow. Anyway, but at the end of episode one, there is a title card which with some narration that comes up over it. And it is a weird alien monster head on a spike over a purple background with some planets in the background and some dark grass, maybe, in the background. Or maybe more spikes in the background. I don't know. It's really weird, and I don't know what it is in context. I have no clue what's going on. I don't think I've ever played beyond episode one. And this kind of scared the crap out of me as a kid. I'm like, oh god, close it out.
You're not alone, dude, because I had no idea what this was, so I followed your reference link and I literally cringed when it popped up, like, woo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's still a little creepy, but it's a lot less creepy and like scary than I remembered.
Well, you've been desensitized since then.
Well, true. This is also 20 years ago when I first saw this, so somewhere around that time. So I'm like, I was like 11, 10, 11, and I'm like, this is weird, and I don't want to play this game anymore.
No, your younger self is not wrong. It's pretty gruesome.
So, yeah, I kind of closed it. But I still love Tyrion. I loved Tyrion then, and I still love it to this day. It's a great game, but that sort of ending title card thing was just one thing that really creeped me out as a kid. Now I look at it, and I'm like, oh, that's pretty neat. But back then, it was like, oh, this is horrifying. But I remember it being like a lot more bloody and gory, and that it was more like a human skull thing. And my memory of it was a lot scarier than what it actually was when I looked it up again.
Moving on to number four in my list is the town of Marland, the plague town in Tales of Zestiria. Now, the central conceit of Tales of Zestiria is that there is this blight called malevolence. It's basically the physical manifestation of all the ill will humanity creates just by being themselves. And in super concentrated doses, it can cause monsters or apparitions or all sorts of horrible things. So your party goes to this lovely little town out in the woods that has been afflicted by this terrible plague that nobody can quite figure out what's going wrong. Your party can see the malevolence. It's normally invisible to mortals, but your party can see it. And so you walk into this normally picturesque town, and the darkness is everywhere. They did an excellent job of rendering it as this kind of gooey haze. And on top of that, it has manifested in these centralized points as these snarling wolf faces that are never really fully explained, and they never really outright do anything to you, but you can go up to them and dispel them, although you get a feeling that it's not really doing anything. So the music is a little creepy, the setting is very creepy, the palette itself is uncomfortable, and all around you there are people dying and being ill with no real way to save them. So while it is not overtly like scary or spooky, there's this kind of omnipresent dread as you're wandering around trying to figure out, okay, how do we get rid of all the bad vibes that are literally manifesting as angry faces?
Wow. That's kind of, it sounds a little freaky.
Kind of stemming out from that, the main villain of the game, the Lord of Calamity, who is the most focused point of malevolence in the world, whose very presence can cause illness around you, can appear at pretty much any point in the overworld map, and you don't know it's coming. So you wander out of one map into the next one, and there's a flash of lightning, everything goes momentarily negative colors, and then you can't move. Your party is literally staggering trying to move forward. Enemies jump like 20 levels, the music is this oppressive heavy bass line. And if you can survive it, you can actually find the Lord of Calamity somewhere in the world map and engage what is the final boss fight and be utterly wrecked.
So you can actually get in the final boss fight early and
very, very early on. And you get a bad ending if you somehow manage to win.
Huh?
So it's it gives you this kind of momentary pause whenever you're about to move into a new region or want to explore. It's like, am I going to get jumped by the big angry cat man? I don't know if I want to do this. Let's just stay over here. The battle system leaves something to be desired because they tried something new and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. But the English dialogue is phenomenal. The writing is wonderful. The story is really neat. The settings are beautiful. The battle system is so-so, but you can break it in ways that are in your favor. So I would recommend picking up the PlayStation 4 version if you're interested, since they did a lot of major updates to it, and not the PS3 version, which is what we have. But it's fun. Avoid the anime at all costs. Do not watch the anime.
Uh-oh.
Do not. Mm-mm. But oh. That's a totally different topic.
Okay.
Is
it spooky too? Is it scary?
It's so bad it's scary.
Okay. I'm just checking.
Here's this wonderful premise. Let's ignore all of it.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. I like shows that do that.
We're talking spooky, not anyway. Ian's angry rant hour. So anyway. What's your number four?
My number four is very similar to your number five, actually. This just happened when I was much younger, so I think I was more scared of it. This is the Phantos that chase after you in Super Mario Brothers 2, and also the Hawkmouth boss in World 7-2 right before you face Wart. Which is a hilarious boss name, by the way. I love the villain name Wart. I don't know why. It's very succinct. It's just Wart. Wart needs to make a comeback. Anyway,
he does.
Anyway, he's not scary. If anything, he's really funny and silly looking. And he hates vegetables, so you know, it's all good.
Those Phantos.
Oh, I know. I know. The Phantos, yeah, you pick up a key and a mask comes alive and starts chasing you, and it is a very tense, very intense thing. It's pretty scary when they start chasing you, and there's nowhere to run, there's nowhere to hide. They are relentless in coming after you until you drop the key, and then they just stop caring. It's like instantly, they're just gone. They just don't care.
But and Hawkmouth, he just kind of glares at you like you pissed him off just by existing.
Yeah, well, the thing is, at the end of every level in the game, for the most part, you face off against Birdo and then go into a Hawkmouth that opens up. And it's just literally a tunnel. It doesn't do anything. Nothing happens when it opens up. But in 7-2, when you pick up the orb to open up the mouth of the hawk mouth, it comes alive and starts chasing after you. It's like,
okay, I didn't remember that at all.
This completely innocuous thing in that up until this point did nothing except advance you to the next stage, all of a sudden comes alive and you have to fight it.
It's almost like those Chozo statues that come to life, but if we start talking about Metroid, that would be the entire episode right there.
Yeah, Metroid. The thing is my experience with Metroid is less so than with a lot of other games, so that's probably why it's not on my list. But yeah, the Phantos and the Hawkmouth from Mario Brothers 2, pretty scary and intense things, especially as a little kid, that kind of really make things a bit more scary in Mario 2, for sure.
Well, continuing with that Mario vibe, my number three choice is the Ghost House from Mario 64.
This is also a very good choice, and it would have made my list if it wasn't on yours.
And it's not just one thing.
It's
a whole world.
It's the whole thing.
I mean, from the way that the wind howls in the general area, and it isn't synced up with that spooky theme in the background, somehow the dissonance between that two makes it worse. The carousel underground is just off key enough that it's unsettling. Catchy, but unsettling.
The carousel is probably, for me, the most off-putting part.
And then everyone who's listening to this is already shouting, "The piano! The piano! The piano!" Yes, definitely the piano.
And don't forget the books.
Hey, the books, they can kind of jump out at you, but that stinking piano man, you walk into the room,
yeah,
you know something's going to jump at you. What's going to be? And the fact that it sounds like a actual piano jumping after you is just
the chomping noise of a piano. It's like, yeah, that's what it would sound like if a piano were actually chomping at you. That is exactly the sound it would make.
And it doesn't go over the top. It does exactly what it needs to be unsettling. And I think that's what makes it so effective.
Right.
It's the minimalism of it.
It might be the scariest ghost house in all Mario games. Just in terms of that atmosphere that it sets, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There they are. Like, the Ghiblis.
Like Mario Kart ghost houses. You know, those are kind of fun. They have a horror theme, but they're, you know, they're not super scary. The ghost houses in Mario 3 and Mario World, they're all right, actually. I kind of like that Mario World's ghost house theme is a remix of the castle theme. It's kind of cool.
Oh, it is? I never picked up
that. Well, all the music in that game is based on the title theme, so. But, yeah.
Wow, I feel dumb.
No, it's fine.
But yeah, those are more like puzzles. They're more tense.
Right. Exactly. Spooky. Exactly. There's a little bit of an atmosphere in Mario World's ghost houses, but it's nowhere near the level of Mario 64. Mario 64 is probably the crown jewel of Mario ghost houses, I would say. Now, my number three is kind of a general topic. It's not really a specific moment. It's more of a kind of a memory of a exposure to a thing that I had not been exposed to previously. And I'm talking about my first actual horror video game, Resident Evil 2.
If you're going to go all out.
Sure. Well, you see, I probably would never have even played it or been even interested in it had a friend not brought it over with them with their PlayStation when they came over to spend the night when I was a kid.
So, sweet dreams.
So this kid brings over Resident Evil, Resident Evil 2, which is a great game, by the way. Well, great for its time. Maybe now a little cheesy and silly and not great. Controls are a little wonky. But, you know, for its time, pretty freaky. And I just remember, for some reason, the TV that I had as a kid, whenever you hook a PlayStation up to it, and only a PlayStation, this never happened with any other game consoles or any, like a VCR or anything else. But a PlayStation, for some reason, threw off the tracking of the TV ever so slightly. So it made the screen do this really weird, slight bounce. It's constant bouncing. And playing Resident Evil 2. Imagine playing Resident Evil 2 in the dark, with the screen doing this really, really weird constant bouncing that's just a little off-putting.
Nope.
In the dark.
And as you're trying to run, the screen's bouncing around.
It's a very light bounce. It wasn't like, it wasn't unplayable. But it was like, just this weird, really creepy thing. And it was like, this is really freaking scary.
No.
So, going back to Resident Evil 2 now, it's mostly funny. It's just silly. But back then, that was definitely one of the more frightening moments. Just sitting there watching and playing Resident Evil 2 in the dark with the screen just being ever so slightly off kilter, and having zombies pop out of windows and having zombie dogs like jump in your face and like freaking zombie monsters jump off the ceiling at you or jump through the ceiling at you. And it's like, yeah, no, this is going to give me nightmares for at least a week, if not more. And yet I kind of liked it. I kind of liked the game despite all that. I kind of liked it, but yeah. That was Resident Evil 2 for me, in my memory of it. What do you got? What do you got, Ian?
Well, for my number two, we don't go to Ravenholm.
This is a pretty good one.
Now, Half-Life 2 is one of those games that everyone seems to know. It's that kind of benchmark setter.
Yeah.
And the first time you're introduced to Ravenholm is when you're entering into the good guy base, and your partner character kind of looks at this hallway that has been boarded off and blockaded, and with this very sad and haunted look says, "We don't go to Ravenholm anymore." And then, of course, everything goes to hell in a handbasket. You have to escape. And the only clear route is to go through Ravenholm, which has been utterly and completely devastated by headcrab invasions. If you don't know what headcrabs are, they're these horrible crab-like blobs of flesh that mount on your head and eat you that way, rendering you a zombie that screams horrible things that turn out to be people speaking backwards. And if you ever take any of the headcrab zombie sound bites and reverse them so you can tell what's being said, you regret that because it sounds even worse when you can understand what they're screaming about. So it's a dilapidated pseudo Eastern European city that looks like it was the failed last bastion against the zombie outbreak. There are traps that you can trigger that sometimes work. Sometimes they don't work and come flying at your face. There are routes you can take, but it doesn't feel very organic half the time. It's like you're trying to figure out the maze as things are trying to kill you from every angle. Mm-hmm. And as far as I can tell, there isn't any set limit on the number of zombies that will spawn. They will always come at you. So it's a matter of evading and not winning.
Right.
Now, folks who are more familiar with the game and its development and yada, 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 think of it as a low point in the game. Apparently, it was one of the first levels developed and thus doesn't have the most cohesive level progression. Some people find it boring somehow. But to me, the disjointedness, the roughness of it just lends it to this sense of decay and just being utterly lost. This is the worst case scenario in a world that is already in a bad state. And it's also one of the first times you are completely alone. You're not being attacked by the Combine, which you can at least rationalize as someone with a motive. The headcrab zombies just want to kill you for no other reason. There's no rationalizing with them. There's no bartering. There's no pleading. You just have to get out of there if you can.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Now, I do like using the gravity gun to grab the buzzsaw blades and fling them around. That's pretty cool.
Oh, sure, there's fun to be had.
Oh, sure.
When you're not panicking.
I think this is where you find the shotgun for the first time in Half-Life 2, if I'm not mistaken. That's always fun.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. That's like the highlight of the... That's the highlight of the whole game for me, is getting the shotgun.
And pretty much your only friend for that entire section dies a horrible grisly death.
Yeah, yeah, he does.
So
it's pretty creepy. It's a good choice. I applaud you, sir. I kind of forgot about it, but yeah, it's good.
There were a number one
bad and scary.
There were a number of things I would put on the list. I've got a number of honorable mentions, but when we were trying to think of things that, you know, really stuck out as spooky moments in games for us, that one came up pretty quick.
Yeah, it's a very good one. I like that. I like Ravenholm, probably because of the shotgun aspect, but still. You know what? You give me a shotgun in a game, and it's a decent shotgun, I'm happy. I'll be honest with you. Because there are games where you get a shotgun, and you're really disappointed by it. But you get a shotgun in Half-Life 2, and it's like, yeah, this is a good gun right here. Anyway. My number two goes all the way back to the early 80s. I forget exactly when this game came out. Before I was even born, I do know that. And, 1983. Yeah. The height of the arcade craze. And this game here, this was back in the heyday of space shooters. This is when it was dark. It was, you know, not much noise. You had the rocket engines behind you. You had some explosions going on when you'd shoot asteroids and or, you know, shoot the lasers in Defender, which, by the way, the sound design of Defender is great. But anyway, we're not talking about that. We're talking about another 80s arcade classic, Sinistar. Now, Ian, are you familiar at all with Sinistar?
only in that I tried dabbling in it once, got utterly wrecked, and said, nope, I'm done.
It is one of the most difficult space shooters in existence. It's also one of the most frightening, because you get the glorious digitized voice of a literal space demon going, I live. And then, rawr, rawr. It's just like, holy crap.
And when you're not ready for it, it's like, I live. Who lives? What lives? What do you mean? Oh, no! And there's nothing you can do.
And then there's just this horrible, horrible roaring noise that's like, oh, man. This game is insane. The sound design in this game is just insane. It was the first game, looking it up, when I was reading up on it a little bit earlier, it said it was the first game to use stereo sound. So basically, this was a sit-down arcade cabinet with stereo sound. So you had speakers on both sides of the size of your head. So imagine this thing roaring right in your ears on the side of your head as you're trying to run out. You're just trying desperately to get away from it or to shoot it and defeat it, and but still trying to run away, because if Sinistar catches you, you're dead instantly. It's an instant death. But you can't kill him. It's just really difficult. So as when you first start, it's basically a clone of Asteroids, but there's a little bit of a twist, and after you play for a while, all of a sudden this space demon monster comes out and tries to wreck your crap.
Oh, and he will.
And he will.
Very easily.
He will, yes. And it's very frightening just having this thing come out, because the first time I played this game, I had no clue what it was. I got it I got it as part of a PC collection of Midway arcade games, Williams arcade games, I should say. And I had no clue what it was. I was playing Joust on it. I was playing Defender, Robotron, all these great classic games that don't really have anything quite like Sinistar. And then I got to Sinistar. And it's like, okay, it's a cool sounding, but ultimately not that amazing Asteroids clone. And then all of a sudden, I live. and then it's like, holy what is that? And then I didn't play it for a while after that, because it scared the literal poop out of me. So, yeah, that's Sinistar. Now I love Sinistar. It's a great game, and I love the sound effects and everything of it. The voice, the technology put into it is really fascinating, but man, it's still pretty freaky. So, we're up to your number one, Ian. What do you got?
This, my number one pick for top five spooky video game moments, is the only one to actually give me literal nightmares.
Ah.
Now, if I say Resident Evil 4, if you've played it, you're probably already guessing what it is. But it was a major overhaul of the Resident Evil formula,
mm-hmm.
very much more action-oriented, and in some ways gave you more control, and in some ways that made it worse. And there were all sorts of creepy zombies and plagas and whatever else you face, but the one enemy that really, really, that just got under my skin was called the Regenerator. There weren't more than, I think, five in the game total. And the first one you come across is dead on a slab. Seems to be dead, anyway. You enter into a room and you find the VR goggles. Not the VR. The infrared goggles. Wrong letter. And a note on the research station saying that these things can regenerate from any amount of damage as long as the key parts are not hurt. The only way to see them is with the infrared goggles. You come out of the room and the regenerator that stood on the slab is not there anymore.
Oh.
The only way to kill it is to pop on the IR goggles, which eliminates your view of anything else, just the shambling horror, and it highlights where you need to shoot. If you can keep calm and keep aim, they're not that bad because they don't approach you very quickly. But that's the problem. They don't rush you, so you don't have that immediate sense of fight or flight. They just kind of stumble towards you. they don't scream or they don't make any kind of scary noises. They just have this kind of shuddering breathing. There's these tiny pinprick needles randomly juddering out of their skin in almost a static, like, not like static stationary, but almost like TV noise static all over the place, just popping out. And as you take them out bit by bit, they don't stop. They don't show any signs of pain or any fear. They just drop to the floor and continue to shamble closer to you because there's always one point right on their back that you can't shoot until they fall down, but they don't fall down until you shoot the other four. And at that point, it's about to get your ankles and you cannot reload fast enough. And Kyle, the nightmare was basically that segment of the game. It's just, I was actually in the shooting position. It's brilliantly done.
Uh-huh.
And it's a fantastic game. Those freaking regenerators, man, they just, it's a, going back to what I was saying about the stupid piano, less is more.
You're right.
You don't have to be gory. They don't have to be overtly sinister. It's that lack of in your face so that you have to stand there and fully take in what is coming for your face with big, nasty, gnarly teeth. You can't look away. You can't run away. You just have to deal with it. And you have to deal with it in a very specific way. And if you don't, you're dead. And it's the suspense and it's the inability to do anything. Right. You have your one option and that's it. And if you screw up, it's your fault.
Right. Yeah. It's those, it's that atmosphere, man. It's the jump scares. They go, they come and go, but atmosphere, I hate those, but atmosphere sticks with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have a certainly atmospheric one for your number one.
Oh, boy. Now, I love me some Sonic CD. It's a great game. I love both soundtracks. I love the U.S. soundtrack. I love the Japanese European soundtrack. It's all great. I love it. I love it all. Except one thing. The boss theme. From Sonic CD US, the US version of the boss theme, is pretty freaking frightening.
It's pretty oppressive.
It's like, what is this? That's really all I can say is, what even is this? What is this doing here? Why is this like freaking Halloween horror music cranked to 11? It's freaking frightening.
And it doesn't help matters that you can put in some of those special codes and you'll get that screen with the Japanese text. I can't remember what it says now.
It says yours, it says yours truly, Satan.
I don't think so.
Yes, it does.
But tiled in the background are these Sonics with these elongated human faces, and it's just really, really unsettling.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it says, like, yours truly, Satan, or something like that.
No, there's no way.
It's.
I don't remember that.
I'm kind of looking it up. There's something about that. There's something. Sonic CD... Japanese text translation. I'm going to look this up because, yeah, it's a hidden message. It says, yours truly, Majin, M-A-J-I-N. Demon person is what it translates to. Dragon, from according to Dragon Ball. So, yours truly, demon person. I don't know. Either way, it's scary.
Yeah, unsettling.
Yeah, and then when you get that weird muscle-bound Sonic, humanoid-like Sonic with weird spikes and that music's playing over it, and you're not sure what it is when you first use that code to unlock it, so you get closer to the screen and that song is still playing, mm-hmm. but you get closer to the screen, you move closer to the screen, and then you realize what it is, and you like jump backwards and freak out and turn the game off because it's so freaking scary looking, and you're like 6 years old. Yeah. I think I was like eight, but yeah, it's... I'm just splitting hairs at this point, but yeah, Sonic CD's U.S. boss music, it is very creepy. That slow laugh, I think the slow laugh is what really just sets it off. If it weren't for the slowed down laugh, I think it would be fine. But I don't know. That laugh just really bugs the crap out of me. It's weird, too, because the Japanese version, boss music, has laughing, too. But it's a fun laughter. It's a fun, evil laugh. It's not like a frightening... It's... Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, yeah. So, Sonic CD boss theme. U.S. theme. It's a little creepy and weird and scary. And I don't like it very much. I like the rest of the soundtrack, though. So, there you go.
Well, now that we are thoroughly unsettled, I think it's time we move on to the Q&A.
Let's do it. All right. Well, of course, you can ask questions. If you want to have your question answered, you can ask it to us via email at bumblecast@yahoo.com. Hop on Twitter and hit up at IanFlynnBKC or at KyleJCRB and use the hashtag BumbleCast. Or you can leave a Patreon comment or message if you're a patron, and we'll see it there. And also, you can leave a comment down in the YouTube comments, and might be able to also pick up your question from there. So, without further ado, let's get into some Patreon priority Q&A. This first one comes from Scruffy Matt. I was delighted to play Sonic Mania and see the glorious return of Super Tails and Super Knuckles.
Yeah!
Do you think this means that their super forms are now canon, the same as Sonic, Shadow, Silvers, and Blazes?
No!
Do you think that any other game characters have a super form that will one day be revealed? If so, who and what would they look like? I personally think that a Super Big would be hilarious.
Now, if they did Super Big...
Which is funny. He's Super Big. So if they actually made him bigger, so he's big, and then he's super big because he gets...
He's not extra large, ladies and gentlemen. He's super big.
He's super big.
Now, the trend, as it is, seems to be that the hedgehogs turn some kind of goldish shade, while everyone else turns kind of a lighter shade and glow white. Uh-huh. There's not a lot to base that off of, but I'm a super nerd, and that's what I paid attention to. With Big, though, if they did a Super Big... I would want him to get his really rare palette glitch from the Dreamcast version of Sonic Adventure. I seem to be like the only one who remembers this.
You must be, because I don't remember it at all.
When you're playing through the Super Sonic chapter, and everyone shows up in the ruined Station Square to deliver the Chaos Emeralds, there is a blink and you miss it moment where Big is there, and for some reason he's candy cane colored. Face white with red stripes.
Okay.
It's a, like, 50-50 chance on the Dreamcast disc, as far as I know. It was fixed in all other iterations, so you'd never see it again. But it just caught me off guard when I found it, and I was like, oh, that's what I heard some people talking about, and nobody's documented it. So I sound like a complete crazy person. As far as I know, Super Knuckles and Super Tails are kind of a bonus game thing. They aren't considered canon, but... I don't know if that'll stick. Who knows? It's their franchise. They can do whatever they want with it. The only justification I really have for that is that the only way to legitimately get to the final boss fight is as Super Sonic. You can access it, you know, via the debug mode with, you know, Super Knuckles and Super Tails, but the only way to really get there is with Super Sonic. And to me, that feels like the baseline. This is the canon story.
Kind of like with Doomsday and Sonic and Knuckles. And
right.
Yeah. Well, either way, I think it's cool that they're in there. I actually didn't know that until we got this question. So, hey.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, yeah.
Cool. That said, I do still want more Overclock Nicole. I mean, she's not a super form. We didn't. That's not a thing.
No,
we didn't
of course not.
No. No, that's not a thing. Anyway. Next question comes from Sam Cybercat. How much money would I have to throw at IDW to get a miniseries based on the Knuckles and Knuckles mode in Sonic Mania? This is also another thing I did not know existed until this question.
It is. It pops in a Knuckles that follows you around like Tails. The palettes are just slightly different enough so that you can have, you know, you can tell the Knuckles is apart. Uh-huh. And it's not just Knuckles and Knuckles. You can have a Tails and Knuckles. You can have a Sonic and Knuckles.
You can have around. A Sonic and Knuckles? Okay,
cool. You can have a Sonic and Knuckles. Around. The sad thing is you have to activate it through the no save cheat menu. You can't start a file like that.
Yeah, that's just kind of the way it is with all the cheats, isn't it? Almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much.
But it's still fun, and I have no idea how I would ride around that, but if I got the chance to, why not?
Can the second player pick up a controller and play as the second Knuckles?
We haven't tested that yet, but I would assume so.
Okay. And is that second Knuckles able to break through the walls that Sonic and Tails can't, I would assume?
As far as I know, it's got all the properties as the primary Knuckles.
Okay. Interesting. I might have to play around with that one of these days. If I ever get the chance to go back to Sonic Mania after I beat it, which, you know, it's hard to go back to games after you beat them once already when you have so many other freaking games to play.
I did go back and finally got all the Chaos Emeralds on my Sonic and Tails playthrough.
Okay.
So I needed time to just calm down and come back to it with a fresh, cool head.
So you actually finished the game. Good job.
On the Sonic and Tails file. I still need to go through my Sonic only, Tails only, Knuckles files, but you know.
Okay. Well, you could say you at least beat the game properly.
Yes. Yes.
I have not beat the game properly because I haven't gotten all the emeralds. Anyway, last priority question comes from Connell T. What things are you looking forward to in Sonic Forces, be it the character customization or just how bad the futury setting is?
I am super excited for the patron-exclusive live playthrough on launch day coming November 7th. It will be 2 hours where you, the lovely patrons of the Bumblecast, will get to decide what the custom character looks like. This will be the custom character that goes out into the interwebs for everyone to download and hopefully play along with. And that we'll be doing more throughout the week leading up to a special Bumblecast gaming. We're going to be playing even more. And that's got what me got the most super excited. Because I kind of know stuff. So it's a little different for me than other people. But I'm looking forward to playing it. Just in general. But what I'm super excited for is that live stuff.
That's going to be fun. That's going to be really cool. You should be there for that.
And as of this recording, times are still to be determined, but I will give folks ample heads up for when it will be going, like at least an hour heads up. So just be sure to stick on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC, and I will let you know.
Cool. And I'm looking forward to the character customization, I guess. I don't know how much I'm actually really looking forward to the game, to be honest with you. I don't know that much about it. I don't know if it's just because I haven't read anything or they just haven't revealed all that much. It doesn't feel like they've revealed very much about it still.
They've kept a lot close to the vest. There are a ton of surprises.
Yeah.
That they haven't even hinted at yet.
It kind of worries me when they do that because I'm thinking, oh man, is this going to be another instance of where they're playing this close to their chest because they know that there's going to be so much backlash against it and so many people aren't going to like it. And it's going to be like, oh, it's another crappy Sonic game once again. That kind of worries me. But you have some inside knowledge and you're not sitting here going and vomiting all over when we talk about it. So maybe it's okay.
I am legit excited to be able to sit down and play it.
Okay.
Not sample it, not see things. I am ready to just sit down and go whole hog into this thing.
I see what you did there, maybe. I don't know if you did that intentionally or not.
Yes.
You should have. Okay.
This is not, you know, because I'm in good with IDW and the Sonic franchise. This isn't because I am a completely blind Sonic fanboy, although I am biased. I will admit.
Yeah, but you recognize bad Sonic games when they're bad.
Yeah. I am legitimately, as a Sonic game player, looking forward to being able to just play this.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel a little better. And
I mean, your mileage may vary. Play it for yourself, see what you think. I am looking forward to it.
I have a high tolerance for bad Sonic games. So, I mean, I love Sonic Spinball, and I love Sonic 3D Blast, so... But yeah. Yeah, I guess the character customization, I always like playing with character customization and seeing what you can do with it. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. I think it's going to be kind of fun in a Sonic game to be able to make your own character.
You have no idea.
Yeah. Okay.
I almost wish they spoiled more of it because I think folks would get more hyped, but that's it. Nothing else.
I'm guessing it has a lot more depth than they have shown so far. Okay, cool. I do want to play around with it, you know? Having your own furry maker sounds like fun. Having your own OC do not steal maker sounds great. I love it. All right, let's get into some of the standard Q&A. This one comes from the Swordsman 100. In issue number 280, a being known as the First Spark was revealed. Now that the comic is over, is there any info you can give us about it?
I'm saving all the canceled Sonic comic plans for Lost Hedgehog Tales, which is on hold for various reasons. Go over to bumbleking.com. You can find up all the reasons why. Long story short, it was part of the greater cosmos that I was building for the franchise. Trying to reconcile and consolidate a bunch of things at once.
Okie dokie. And the next question here comes from Zach M. Before the reboot, did Ian ever have any plans on bringing back the Brotherhood of Guardians who were missing?
All the canceled comic material is going to be part of Lost Hedgehog Tales, which is on hold for right now. Go to bumbleking.com. You can find out all the details there. Long story short, I was going to address them, but no, I was not going to bring back the army of Grandpa Knuckles.
Army of Grandpa Knuckles.
I know they have their fans. I can appreciate that, but no.
How about the army of Knuckles in one city on one island? And the army,
those days are long behind us.
And the army of Knuckles that are suspiciously very Knuckles looking, but also female.
You were impressed with Manny's Knuckles and Knuckles. How about Knuckles and 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 Knuckles and
Knuckles. Do you like palette swap Knuckles? Do you like Knuckles a slightly different shade of red? Do you like Knuckles as a girl? Do you like Knuckles as a girl with robot things in her hair? Do you like Knuckles as a scientist? Do you like Knuckles as an old guy, as a weird old dude? Do you like Knuckles? Do you like Knuckles eating beans? Do you like Knuckles? Please like Knuckles. We need you to like Knuckles. You must like Knuckles. Buy my comic. All right, and our final question comes from Rika. In Bumblecast episode 16, you implied you have some experience with French comics. I'd like to know which French and European comics in general you've both explored, at least as much as you remember at least something about them.
I don't remember saying French comics specifically, but that was like season one Bumblecast, early season two.
It's a couple years ago.
So, don't quite retain it all. I might have been thinking of the French manga-styled comics for Wakfu. There's a noirish anthro series that is originally in German, I want to say, called Bloxad, which is an absolutely gorgeous series. Look it up sometime. I don't know a lot of European stuff immediately off the top of my head. It's more of the reputation and the samples that I've seen and my appreciation for how they approach storytelling in the comic format versus how we're used to it over here in North America.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same for me. I'm really not familiar with most of European stuff and like no French stuff. I don't think is Asterisk a French comic. I don't think it is.
I can't remember what its original language is.
Yeah, I can't remember either, but I do know Asterix and Obelix. I'm familiar with their with the characters. I know what they look like, but that's really about the extent of it. I guess Sonic the Comic is something that could count.
I would say so, because it's very...
It has
European sci-fi versus what came before.
Right. This is, we talked about this on the last
episode. Not what came before, too. What happened over here is what I mean.
Yeah. And there's also, is Tintin a comic?
Yeah.
Okay. I was making sure. I was like, okay, Tintin, is that a cartoon? Is that a comic?
Did now, it have I'm both? Not sure it if have... Tintin started as like a newspaper periodical and then moved to comic, or if it was a comic graphic novel series, or how it is. That would, that could stand some more insight.
Yeah, because I'm vaguely familiar with Tintin as well, in a very vague sense. I like know the name and some of the imagery, and that's really it. Same thing with Asterix and Obelix, but that's unfortunately really all I know. It's, there's just so much stuff out there, Ian, and there's not enough time to get into it all.
And no, then, no, there isn't.
I'd really love to dive into some of this stuff and learn more about it, because I'm always fascinated by the way different cultures and different areas of the world tell stories. So I'd love to sample some of it someday, but it's just finding the time and the energy and the willpower to do all these things. That's going to do it for this Q&A. We got anything else we need to get into, Ian?
I don't think so. Just remember to swing by our Twitters for all the news, and yeah, there you go.
Yeah, don't forget about that Sonic Forces stream, which I think is... Do we have another episode before that happens, or no? When does the game come out?
It comes out November 7th.
Okay.
Which is 2 weeks from now, so it might be... We might have an episode right before it.
Yeah, okay. No, we won't.
No, we won't.
No, we will not. We will have an episode after.
Oh, well then.
Unless, are you streaming it on the day it comes out?
Yep, we are 2-hour patron-only stream on launch day, November 7th. Streaming it on twitch.tv/BumbleCastGaming on the 8th and 9th. And then patrons get another exclusive BumbleCast Gaming Live as we continue even further into the game.
Ooh. Yes. You should all tune in for that. Gonna be fun. So that's it.
Kyle, where can the fine people of the internet find you?
You can find me on this show, sitting here just chilling. You can also find me on Twitter at KyleJCRB, or over at kngi.org, where you can find archived episodes of the Bumblecast, along with many other shows, including my other show, Nitro Game Injection, which is all about video game music remixes and the people who make them. You can find it streaming live every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time over at 8bitx.com, and also at facebook.com/KNGI Network or youtube.com/KyleJCRB. You go to any of those places on Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time and you will find it.
And you can follow what I'm doing on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC or over at BumbleKing.com. That's got my entire work history, news updates, and the Sonic Forces comics as they come out and are released by Sonic Official.
You can get some forces of Sonic forced into your eyeballs. Do it.
It isn't forced. You just accept it because it's just that good.
Ah.
Before we go, we're going to give a shout out to all the wonderful patrons who make this show possible. And my continuing quest to say you all in one breath will begin in 3, 2, 1. Big thank you to Daniel H, Alex P, Zephyr Flame, Chris A, Damo, John B, Sam Cybercat, Mike B, Connell T, Samuel P, Justin G, Jennifer R, David C, Revan the Light, Diane W, Lisa M, Today's Passenger, Artendi M, Scruffy Matt, Lee H, K, Nuts, James G, Chevelle, Don B, Sin Fritz, Frogman, Taco Elgato Comics, John M, S. Shavardovich 9, X, James K, Overthink Films, Adam B, and Ron.
My favorite patron is Nuts. Still. Nuts will always be my favorite patron.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Don't forget, you can also head on over to twitch.tv/BumbleCastGaming, where you can find us streaming random games at random times throughout the week, several times a week. At least we try to as best as we can. Head on over there and subscribe and get notified when we do go live. And of course, you can find Patreon exclusive Bumblecast Gaming live streams every Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time at patreon.com/bumblecast. And we have the Bumble Store at shop.spreadshirt.com/bumblestore. Head on over there and you can get a Bumble shirt or a Bumble mug or a Bumble sticker or
all sorts of Bumble stuff.
Or Bumble shoes. Can you get Bumble shoes?
I don't think they have shoes, but at least not yet.
Well, someday maybe you can get some Bumble shoes. But you can probably get Bumblecasts anywhere else or Bumble King. You can get all sorts of stuff there.
Spreadshirt. Something to drink your Bumble coffee from.
Ah, yes. And enjoy your Bumble breakfast on your Bumble TV while reading stuff on your Bumble phone. Yes. No.
Well, you can certainly get a Bumble case for your phone.
You can get a Bumble case for your Bumble phone. We're going to have a Bumble phone someday.
Oh, why not?
Well, we got to diversify, man. If we want this to be a successful venture, we have to diversify. We have to diversify our portfolio. It's a very, very common thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You don't sound very convinced.
I'm just trying to think of more business jargon, and I got nothing's coming up. Well, I need to synergize.
We need a lot more synergy in here. This is not cutting it. This is not working out at all. We need some showtime synergy in here. You know. Okay.
This is going to wrap it up for episode 55 of the Bumblecast. Hope you weren't too scared by our top 5 list, and we will see you in a couple weeks for Bumblecast episode 56.
I live. I heard you for like a split second, and then you just went away. You're like, oh, and then it's gone.
Yeah, I was getting some bit-tune trumpets from your end.
You're welcome. Hope you like my chiptune farts. Chiptune farts. Those do exist. They're called bad Sega Genesis games.
Oh.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay what you want download.
Did you ever hear Weird Al's latest album?
Yes.
Where he did that song in the style of, I think it was like the Eagles, that's nothing but corporate jargon.
Yeah.
I love that song.
It's great. It is great. I do love me some Weird Al. Fun fact, the video for the sports song on that album.
Yeah.
Filmed at the college I went to when I was going to that college, and no one thought to tell me.
Well, son of a gun.
Yeah, I totally could have like been an extra or something on that video and totally missed my chance. Oh, well, maybe someday I'll get in a Weird Al video. Not this time, though. And I have no clue why he chose that school to do it at. Probably because it was out in the middle of nowhere and no one would bother him.